a few practical tools. Being with breath is a crucial skill and means for stilling the mind. Many ancient and pre-modern cultures have understood that there's a link between the functioning of our bodies and the functioning of our minds, and one of the ways to mediate both mind and body is via the breath. Yeah. The Greeks have understood it with their pneuma, the Indians with their prana and fana, the Chinese and Japanese with their ki and chi. There is a power in the breath, and there's a capacity of modulating body states and mind states via the breath. A very, very simple principle in breath meditation hinges on the fact that it is easier to make the body still. We can order the body to sit still. We can adopt a posture. Much more so than we can tell our minds to adopt a posture. That seems to be somewhat more complex as a task, to make the mind adopt a clear posture. But with the bodies, we can reasonably easy do that. Some of us for longer, some of us for shorter periods, but it's possible we can sit still for a moment. If we sit still, our breath becomes more still because the body has not much activity. If our attention is directed to the sensations of breath, then the mind, now this is where magic really starts, the mind begins to resemble the things it attends to. Now that is one of the linchpins of Buddhist mind training, that the mind begins to resemble the things it attends to in a continuous and in a repeated way. This is both relieving and slightly frightening, because it means that what we keep attending to and the way in which we keep attending to in our lives is going to make up our experience. This is going to be what we call experience. Meditation, breath meditation, makes use of that principle. We make the body still, and the body is still, and the breathing becomes more soft, more gentle. When we attend to a breathing that becomes increasingly more soft and gentle, that gentleness gets transposed to the mind. Yeah, to the climate of mind starts to resemble the object of its attention, namely a breath experience that is smoother and smoother. That principle, you have to understand, is at the heart of mind training. It's not a magic trick, or it's not a method of kind of auto-hypnosis or something like that. It is something that is inherent in the way mind, body and breath work. We can modulate that. You want to know how an angry person feels, you start breathing like an angry person. An actor, trainee actor, you start breathing like an angry person, and you feel like an angry person breathes, and via that you get the body state of an angry person, and via that you get the emotional state of an angry person. Now it works, thankfully it also works the other way around. Yeah, we can emulate the peaceful state, we can attend to the sensations of that peaceful state, and this then makes our mind more peaceful. So think of this, when you do meditations on attending to the breath and its sensations, this is not just some kind of queer idea. If we obsess on it long enough, we kind of get fixated into some peaceful state. It is a very fundamental principle that by attending to the patterns of breathing, we can modulate body and mind. We can modulate our emotions. Well, for most of us, this will mean we need to establish body awareness that we can stay in a prolonged way with the things that happen in the body. We're all fascinated with body. We all love pleasure, and we all love lust, and we all love gratification, and we have various likes and dislikes in all this. And I think we all dislike pain, and we fear that aspect of the spectrum. But in between the two, there's a large segment which most of us are bored with. If bodies aren't particularly pleasurable or aren't particularly excited or aren't particularly painful, in both cases this draws natural awareness from our part. If bodies are just kind of plain bodily normal, we tend to be bored with them. We tend to think it's a lot more fun to think about things. So there's a definite disinterest in many of us to be with bodily processes. Sitting here digesting my breakfast, for example, it's not one terribly fascinating sort of pursuit right now. Body knows how to do it. I don't have to tell it. And it doesn't really... I've eaten two eggs this morning. You know, it doesn't really fascinate me to, in detail, follow the ramifications of their... of how they're being processed right now. So this is not something I would naturally gravitate towards. So for most of us, there is a subtle resistance against being with ordinary bodily experience. And breathing is, in some strange way, quite ordinary. It's a fantastic function. There's probably no other body function that can be part of one of our nervous systems, i.e. can be completely controlled, and that at the same time can be also completely forgotten and left to the other nervous system, who just takes care of breathing. We'd be dead if that wasn't the case. If we couldn't completely forget breathing and continue breathing, I'm sure we'd be all dead right now. My mindfulness of breathing isn't as good as that I could really rely on for my life, that I don't miss a breath. So I'm very glad that my other nervous system takes over if my conscious mindfulness lapses a bit. The breath in itself, physiologically, is already an unusual function. Breath is also something we can actually pay attention to. If we attend to our breath, we can get a fairly accurate reading of what's going on in our body. Human minds are not geared to, say, attend to the heart rhythms very accurately. Yeah. You couldn't hear a heart murmur. Even if you can feel your heartbeat, you know, if you really wanted to hear a heart murmur and exactly figure out what's going on with your heart, you don't actually have the equipment for that. Human minds don't quite operate at that frequency. But with breath, they're pretty good. Yeah. You can feel in your breath that you're happy, that you're sad, how much energy there is, how constricted you are. So breath is a powerful tool. It isn't just a kind of meditational trick. But attending to the breath will bring us inevitably into a deeper relationship to how we operate and what's happening in our life. What is body-mind, what state it is in. So breath is a very... it's the kingly road, basically, to understanding and to pacifying the mind. And meeting ourselves in this process is unavoidable. If we attend to how we breathe, we will get to meet ourselves. What state we're in, how we cope, how much embodied we can allow ourselves to be. On top of the fact that breath can actually make us more peaceful, that we can actively modulate our mental states. So keep that at the back of your minds when we do breath meditations. That singles out the object of breathing, and you notice the little apostrophes there, object here, in a very, very broad sense. It is not an object in its in a sort of reified thingy way. It is an object in terms of that, something we can take as an object of our awareness. But obviously it's a process. It has a beginning, it's middle, it has an end. It has different phases and stages. It singles out breathing from any other meditation object. Anything we might recite, we might focus our gaze on, we might think, we might conceive visually. Breath meditation has a power that is quite unmatched by other objects of meditation. That is why meditational teachings across the cultures have focused on this. It doesn't cost anything. You always have got it with you. Yeah, as long as you're alive, I would expect you to continue breathing. And it varies. It tells us about our states. Breath can be quite pleasurable. Although it sounds like a fairly trite, ordinary activity, it can be quite pleasurable sitting here, feeling all your internal organs stroked by this gentle flow of something that comes in, vitalizes you, and then leaves again. Breath is also something we share. Even your worst enemies are probably breathers. Yeah. You share breath with them. It's something you can't really completely control. You depend on it every moment. Breath is something that teaches you about the lakanas, about the universal characteristics of all experience, and the dependency on it. You recognize some of the dukkha aspect. We're conditioned. In the elementariness of breathing, well, it's basically not that much. CO2, O2 exchange. We recognize some of the impersonality. And obviously in the coming and going, we recognize some of the impermanence. So there you've got the three lakanas right there in one single breath. So how do I get more deeply in touch with breath? I think the first thing is you look, or you scrutinize how you constitute a relationship to your breath. Many of us would probably constitute such a such a relationship via the metaphor of looking, seeing, observing, watching. And as I mentioned earlier this morning, this is one very powerful way of entering into a relationship, seeing something, observing something, watching something. This is particularly useful for strong things. It's particularly useful for things which threaten to flood us, so big, hefty emotions. But for other things, it's too distant. Yeah. Seeing things, watching, observing things imposes always a little bit of distance. It imposes a little bit of perspective. Now, while this is desirable for some aspects of our experience, for other aspects, it's not. Some things want to be actually related to a little more closely than just be observed. If you've got a little kid, it doesn't want just to be observed, it wants to be fed, it wants to be held, it wants to be touched. Yeah? Observing won't do. Yeah? As mothers and fathers will know. Yeah. So, relating to the breath, on the metaphor of observing or seeing, or the visual metaphor, is one aspect, but it's too limited. It's crucial that we learn to be with breath, not just by the metaphor of seeing, watching, observing, but actually touching. Yeah. Touching breath, touching sensation. Going close, being with. Yeah. These are big, powerful words. Being with something is very different from observing something. I'm a lot more in touch with something I am in touch with than with something I just observe. You understand? Yeah. This is very crucial. So if we spend much time in meditation. It is crucial that we don't go into a habitual clinical observation stance. Yeah? That's not what the Buddha meant. The observation stance is totally legitimate, it's very powerful, it's very useful for some situations, particularly situations that are threatening, that are strong, that are threatened to flood. Many things are not flooding. You know, sitting here, being with my breath, I'm not being flooded. I need to get in touch more closely, so we have to move in. Imagine if you see something, it doesn't necessarily tell whether you are being seen as well. Yeah? It can be a one-sided relationship. We can be voyeurs. We all have been voyeurs, probably in some way or the other. And it's a very one-sided relationship. Now imagine a relationship of touch. If we are in touch with the sensations of breath, is a lot more direct. It's a lot more close. Whenever you are touch something, you are also being touched. Particularly when you touch somebody, this somebody will also touch you. You are being felt in a much more direct way than if you just see somebody. So these are different types of relationship to the breath and to your experience. And it's important that you think about this. It's important that you find out what you habitually do. Because what you habitually do may not be the only thing doable, and it may not even be the ideal thing. Yeah. So all these types of relationship, sniffing something out, touching something, hearing something, seeing something, they have useful places in Buddhist meditation practice. But it's crucial that we know how to distinguish them. So if I ask you for 15 minutes to sit with me, try to be in touch with the breath. Try to be in touch with what is happening in the body. Recall what I said about posture. Find this balance, upright, relaxed. And then let us get in touch with the body space. My awareness enters the space of the realm of my experience. Now in that realm there are thoughts, there are images, there are sensations, there are emotions. Some of them more loud. Generally the thoughts, they say things to me. They kind of carry a message, and then they have a label. The label says, believe me, think me, I'm important, do something, don't just sit here. I'm the last one of my kind. You'll forget me. This kind of thing. And we have to learn not just to follow the label. You have to look what's in the bag. We can't drink every bottle. We can't go all the places. We can't eat everything. We can't marry everybody. Time and attention are finite. Our time is finite. We are not going to live eternally. Some things are more important than others. So if I enter the space of my experience, my awareness sinks into the organism, sinks into the body, and feels. It feels, well, it's basically two channels. you can go into sort of spotlight channel mode, and then you feel individual sensations, a pull in my left shoulder, a warm spot somewhere in my belly, pressure, my buttock, a knot somewhere in my thigh, this kind of thing. Reasonably discreet, individual, tactile experience. That's one mode of inner awareness. But there's also another mode. And this mode asks, is more spacious. It asks, what is happening in a particular area? Not an individual sensation, but what is happening in my belly? What is happening in my left side? What is happening in my face? And it is possible to sustain our awareness in the whole area, not just on one little thing happening in that area, but we can stay with the whole of it. We can stay what I would call field awareness. So there is a position where actually I feel all that is happening in my face, or all that is happening in my chest, or maybe even all that is happening in the complete body. See whether it is possible to do that, rather than following individual sensations, making the awareness big, making it sort of making it a field awareness. And I know you're doing that a lot in your daily life. You go into a shopping market, and there's a moment where you kind of make the awareness very wide to orient, where is the stuff I need? You're not interested in different brands of chewing gum. Right now you're interested in finding the vegetables from the washing powder. You orient big areas. Can I be with then what's happening in my chest? Can I be with the chest? Or with the torso? All of it at once. Breathing into it, feeling it expand. Taking stock and acknowledging how all of it feels. So I'd like you to go to the area of where you feel the breath at its lowest in the body. The lowest area of body that feels the breath movement. And in this place, you open up your awareness. You allow it to settle there. Not on a tiny spot. You allow it to feel all of the breathing coming, increasing, decreasing, fading away. Clearly feeling what the body feels when you breathe in. And the breath vitalizes and fills you. And the breath and its sensations are beginning to decrease and to fade. The awareness, the field awareness, remains. Sensing the timelessness in this. Sensing that this is given. You do not have to breathe. There is breath coming There is presence of mind here available. Sensations rising and falling. There is something that is capable of knowing and feeling at the same time. Meditation till 12:45, aware when there will be lunch. So, do recall the points from before the last walking meditation. Standing, starting with standing, scanning through the body. You want a clearly identifiable body experience. You want to feel how it feels to be where you are right now. Whether you like that or not, whether you find it agreeable or not, whether it's pleasant or not, that's not important. Important is that you are doing this and that you are capable of being with it. So, scanning through the body quickly, establishing a field of body experience. This is how it is for me standing here right now, sitting here right now. And then you bring your awareness to the soles of the feet. And when you start walking, this is the prime focus of your awareness. The change, the sensations in the soles of your feet. You walk slowly with a clearly defined end. You stop. You make sure that your mind is with the body and its sensations. You turn round and you walk back. This entails some discipline. The discipline is not trying to make your mind hard and fast go to a tiny spot of your body. The discipline is bringing it back. The discipline is not getting angry with something that doesn't work quite from the first moment onward. The discipline is the being patient with yourself, not talking loudly inside yourself about yourself, this kind of thing. This is a lot more important. The will that is so crucial in meditation is not will to make the mind go into a particular state. Any state you can make the mind go into at will is a priori suspicious to me. Just to be clear, any state worth attaining is not something you can willfully produce like that. It's going to be a form of glorified control, and is that not terribly enlightening, nor terribly lasting? All the things that are calling for will and discipline in meditation practice is your willingness to go back to an exercise, to bring the mind back from one of its countless digressions, and just to do that one more time than it decides to go digressing. Okay. That's where you need the will. Collectedness of mind, samadhi, this is something that comes on its own. You cannot make that by will. So please, practice well. And I'm sure there are some practical announcements regarding the lunch. Yeah?